Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Live from Training Camp 2018, inside the walls of UC Health Training Center, presented by Matthews Fine Watches and Jewelry. Here's Schlereth than Evans.
Good Thursday morning. Welcome to it. Mark Schlereth sitting in for Mike Evans, who recovers from open heart surgery. He's doing great. Talked to him yesterday. He'll be back and better than ever pretty soon. UC Health Training Center is where we are set up, and I'm live here at UC Health Training Center along with my partner today, Troy Rank. You know, Troy, perspective is an interesting thing, and it's an important thing, and it really helps you when it comes to being happy. You know, today you're up, you're early, you know, you're tired, it's been a long week, you've been grinding, and you roll into the Broncos facility, and a sudden waft hits your nostrils, a sudden smell, the waft of a certain smell hits your nostrils, and you're like, oh, Lord have mercy. I walked by the porta potties today as a guy was emptying the porta potties for waste management, and I'm like, you know what? Life is good, brother. And that's important, right? Life is good. We can complain about the Broncos. We can talk about some of the weaknesses. We can talk about some of the issues. We can talk about the Rockies losing three straight series. But life is still good, but we're going to talk about it regardless, right? I mean, we're going to talk about the Rockies losing another series, a tough game to the Pittsburgh Pirates as they take 2 of 3. Just another one of these series that slips through the fingertips of our Colorado Rockies.
That hurts. Again, when I was making a big deal about the fact they got walked off 3 times in 5 days, it's because it leaves no margin for error. That's the issue. And now they have to finish realistically 28-20 over the final 48 games, or maybe even 29-18 over the final. So you say, well, that's doable. You hear 28-20, you say, that's doable. Well, they're 6 over after 114. So now you're asking them to do something over the final 48 that they haven't been able to do over the first 114. So the challenge just becomes a little more daunting. It doesn't mean it's impossible, but getting walked off 3 times now forces you, with this series tonight with the Dodgers, you need to win 3 of 4. Because the Dodgers come in, if they split, they're fine. They'll take a split. You don't win 3 of 4 against them at home, you really start to put yourself in a difficult situation.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And, you know, obviously you're excited about, you know, they're only 3 games out, but you keep seeing the teams that roll in here. And we talked about it with, Milwaukee. We talked about it with Pittsburgh and how hot they were. We also now have the Dodgers rolling. And that sound you hear in the background is the Broncos. We're at the Broncos facility, UC Health Training Center. They're filling up the nitrogen tanks, Troy.
Oh, I thought that was the air coming out of my balloon as usual.
No.
Wah, wah.
No, that is all these new facilities, man. All these new facilities, they have the cryogenic chambers. It is science. I think Ted Williams, part of his head is in there, or at least most of it is in there. Part of it. Yeah, they've split it up. It's in several different places, I think.
It's been autographed, too, and sent to multiple places.
Right, yes, exactly. So they're filling up the nitrogen tanks. Now, like, these facilities are ridiculous. Did you take the facility tour?
My ace photographer Jeff Howe did. I was flying back from Baton Rouge from our baseball tournament, and yeah, I was mesmerized at how nice it is.
Here's the thing, just on a tangent, the thing that kills me about this, how much money do they put into this facility?
It's up to $42
million. $42 million. Now, in the last collective bargaining agreement, right, the last CBA, they did this whole thing about how the players couldn't come back until, like, April, you know, and it's going to be like, we're not going to let the coaches get our hands on these players and stuff. You got this $42 million facility, state-of-the-art cryo machines, everything else, and you've eliminated your players' ability to come back in here and train in the off season. I used to live here. I'd go, have surgery, I'd come back. It'd be, you know, January, February, whatever. And I'd be here until we started doing whatever it is we were doing. And now you got these $42 million facilities. So the players, have negotiated this through the Players Association. They can't come use these facilities, these cryo machines. It's all free to them. So then they have to go to some performance center in Arizona. So they got to move their family down there. They've got to spend the money on lodging, on a house. They rent a house. Then they go out there and spend thousands and thousands of dollars on these facilities. Like, somewhere there's a disconnect here. And you know, it's funny because there's an article that Scott DeHuff found about Demaryius Thomas, you know, the guy that you guys love to hate. Broncos country just loves to hate Demaryius Thomas. And
well, I think the hater voices are just louder. I think the majority of fans appreciate Demaryius Thomas. It's the silent majority appreciates him, but his criticism is real. There's certainly a minority that's loud and boisterous because of his, I would say, drops and what has become dovetailed production the last couple of years.
Well, what I always say is, you know, he's 6'3", 228, like play 6'3", 228 all the time. You know, sometimes he doesn't look, sometimes he looks 5'11", you know, 190. But I will say this, the article is really enlightening, and this is one of the things that I've learned calling games, is you get involved with guys, you get guys' backstory, things you don't know, and the pain that he's been in the last couple of years with that hip labrum and that torn labrum in his hip and partially torn labrum in his hip and how much it's bothered him and how he in the offseason was contemplating retirement, and he found this article about body, about inflammation based upon your diet, completely changed his diet, has felt, according to him in this article by James Palmer in at NFL.com, he feels so much better. And by all accounts, you talk to anybody who operates during camp, and I'll ask you, by all accounts, you talk to the players, he's had the best camp he's had in years. Like, he is rejuvenated, he looks great, he looks fresh, and he is moving exceptionally well. Your takeaway from Demaryius Thomas and all the things that I just mentioned about this article written by James Palmer.
Yeah, good guy, James Palmer, friend of the program, friend of mine, does great work. I mean, we've all known that Demaryius Thomas has a hip issue. He puts it to paper that he has a partially torn hip labrum. We've speculated on that for 2 years. Demaryius would not acknowledge it other than we know because he couldn't come out of breaks, couldn't stop.
Uh-huh.
He admitted in there, like at the top of a route, he was having trouble stopping because of the pain in his hip. I mean, you could see that. I mean, I kept trying to tell people, like, it's not just the quarterback issue that a reason his production is coming down. It's he isn't right. Like, you could physically see it. I give him merit for being tough. Like, he is a tough guy. He works with players. There's a reason he's captain when some of us don't understand. He's tough. He plays hurt. All that. But the fact is, once you get to the field and you live this, you're expected to produce. That's the hard part of the NFL. If you're good enough to play, you're expected to produce. And he had set the bar so high. Clearly, there's games he should not have played. He should have set out. But what I make of this, I don't think it's the best camp he's ever had. The last camp he had with Manning, by far for me, was his best camp. He's had a good camp, but he's aging now. You know, he's not the same guy. So he's had a really good camp. I'd say Emmanuel Sanders, for me, has had the best camp I've ever seen him have since he's been here. But Demaryius under Peyton, they had such a synchronicity. I haven't seen that yet. But this idea he changed his body, he did all that last year. Remember, he went vegan.
Yeah.
The difference is he went vegan last year and tried to play at 214 pounds. And this year he's playing, he got down to 212 at one point in the offseason, but he put the strength back on. Says he wants to play between 220, 228, and that's where he needs to be. He got too thin last year.
I will say this about the inflammatory response. There are a lot of foods that just make you swell, like internally at the cellular level. And that's what he's created, or that's what he's eliminated from his diet. And he certainly, by all accounts, at least by this article, he certainly seems to feel better. And a Demaryius Thomas that's feeling well, especially with the pressure that the young guys are putting on behind him, I just think that bodes well for this Denver Broncos football team. So it'll be very interesting to see how he does. You know, he's one of the guys that needs to step up. He's one of the guys that needs to play better. Well, you know what? Fanside.com listed five other Broncos that really need to step up their game. I'm going to talk to you about those next.
Mark Schlereth here. When you're looking to replace your windows, you want the best. That's why I endorse Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. They sell Infinity from Marvin fiberglass windows. You can't buy Infinity windows from big box stores, so you know they never compromise on quality. Infinity fiberglass windows offer unparalleled value, energy efficiency, and durability. So call my friends at Gravina's Window Center of Littleton, 303-794-0490, or find them online at windowsforyourhome.com, and make sure you tell them Stink sent you.
Than Evans, Mark Schlereth, Troy Rank from the UC Health Training Center. The Broncos kick off practice here. The last practice open to the public before they kick off Saturday night against the Minnesota Vikings. And I came across, Troy, a kind of interesting article because, you know, we've talked about guys, we've talked about the players, we've talked about the young players, we've talked about a lot of things, but I found an interesting article that ranked the five players from each team that, to me, kind of need to step up and play well. And it was fanside.com where I found this. And five guys for the Broncos, and let's go 5-1, that really need to play exceptionally well for this Broncos team to get out of the funk that they were in last year. So let's start with number five. And I'll just kind of roll through these for you because I think it's an interesting list. Jared Valdir. Jared Valdir, as you know, started off his career as a left tackle. He played some center as well for the Oakland Raiders. Then he signed a big free agent deal, went to the Arizona Cardinals, played left tackle there for a while, played pretty well, had some injury issues the last couple of years, moved over to the right tackle, was kind of a disaster early, but started playing a little bit better there late last year, and then he got injured again. Jared Valdir, I think there's two things that are interesting about Jared and what he needs to do here for the Broncos. One is he's got to master the right tackle position. And I think when you look at it, the right tackle position has been such a disaster the last couple of years. Remember when what was the kid's name, gave up five sacks? Schofield?
Yeah.
Gave up five sacks to Khalil Mack in a game. And then last year they went with the experiment that was Menelik Watson. And
between Ty Sembrello, Donald Stevenson, and Menelik Watson, I mean, it has been a mess the last year and a half.
Right. So you're asking a guy that, let's face it, has had his struggles. It's closer to the end of his career than the beginning of his career. And Jared Valdir to come out here and play well at the right tackle position to solve an issue that you have had at that position. And it has been a pretty significant issue because, as you mentioned, it's been nothing short of a train wreck the last couple of years.
Well, and Valdir, he had a foot issue last year, and that kept him, took a real cautious approach in OTAs, Mark. He's healthy now. He looks the part. I mean, he's every bit of 6'7", 6'8", 300 plus. I mean, he looks like he could jump into a professional wrestling ring. I mean, that dude is put together. Here's the thing. His first three games at right tackle last year, you could argue he's the worst right tackle in football when he moved over to the Cardinals. His last 10 games, much better in terms of pressures allowed, sacks allowed. So is he that guy? Can he build off the momentum he gained his last 10 games in Arizona? Because they need someone to solidify the position. It's that simple. If he goes down, is it Billy Turner? Is it Cyrus Kwanjo? I mean, they don't have a lot. I mean, I know some people really like Turner, but there's a reason he's been a backup for me. And so they're just not a lot of depth. They need Valdir to be the answer.
Right. I think Billy Turner is one of those guys who looks the part out here that people get excited about. And when he's in games, there have been some question marks. And again, I go back to his time in the film I used to watch when he was with the Miami Dolphins. And I mean, he really struggled as a Miami Dolphin. One of the reasons he was released, because he started several games. But, you know, a lot of young players really struggle. Is he ready to make that next step, to make that next jump? I don't know. But he certainly looks the part. But Valdir is a guy that has to be good. You look at this team, you got a young player in McGovern beside you. You have got to be good. That's a position that has that really, one, they have struggled with. Two, I think from a depth standpoint, you can make an argument as you're rebuilding your roster, depth is going to be the thing that haunts you. Like, if you have a couple of injuries, if the Broncos have a couple of injuries, you have a lack of depth to cover those injuries, you're in deep trouble. And one of the issues that the National Football League has right now, compared to what it was before this last collective bargaining agreement, depth is one of the big issues, because what you try to do is you try to make up for all the big salaries you pay quarterbacks and some of the other, you know, cornerstone type of positions by keeping young rookies, second year players, third year players that are still restricted from the type of money they can make because of the salary cap issues or because of the rookie contract issues. So Valdir is a guy that has got to step up. Number four on this list, Darian Stewart. Darian Stewart, off year last year at the safety position, really missed the I think he really missed just the connection that he had with T.J. Ward, and the fact that T.J. Ward was, you always talk about Aqib Talib being the soundtrack of the defense. T.J. Ward was the guy who called the defense. T.J. Ward was the guy that got them lined up in the right position. T.J. Ward was that security blanket for a lot of guys. And, you know, there are always those guys in any position group that just see the game. You know, they can see the forest through the trees, so to speak. They see the game, and they can make a call, and you're all like, okay, now we're on the same page. He lost T.J. Ward, and he no longer had his guy that put him on the right page. And he has got to be better this year, because last year, and Darian Stewart will be the first to tell you, it was a bad year.
Well, and the thing was, he's adjusting to Justin Simmons, and they had multiple coverage busts throughout the year, early on especially, and then they looked like they got it fixed, and then they had more coverage busts at the end of the year. So that is something that they need to solve. Stewart's in, you got the right mindset. He understood when they went out, Mark, and got Sue Cravens, that it was a hint to him, you got to get better. Now, Cravens is a different type player. He's more of a hybrid player to cover tight ends. That guy that might help with that. But still, Darian Stewart is not naive. He saw what happened to T.J. Ward last training camp.
Right.
So he needs, you know, he's having a good camp. He needs a good camp and a strong season, because he's one of those guys that's at a crossroads with the Broncos.
You think about it. Now, they gave up 32 touchdown passes in 2015 and 2016 combined. That's what the no-fly zone did.
Last year, 29.
29 last year. T.J. Ward leaves. 29 last year. I mean, obviously, you know, those are things. Justin Simmons comes in. There's not the same communication. They talked about it as well. You know, you look at the offensive line. Part of the issue, and part of the issue with Garrett Bowles, was having Max Garcia beside him. You don't have that veteran voice. You don't have that guy that can basically say, "Hey, this is what we're going to do." And those are kind of the ancillary things that happen to a football team when you make the decisions that every team has to make. I mean, John Elway, I understand. I had a conversation with John because, you know, at the time I was like, I don't like the move over $5 million to let go of T.J. Ward. And I understood that he didn't play and he had the hamstring and all those kind of things. I just didn't like the decision. We had this conversation. It's like, at what point, you know, do you change over your roster when you've got a guy that's ready to play? And the guy that was ready to play, as you know, was Justin Simmons, but you lost that communication. You lost that ability to talk. You lost some of that. Like, it probably would have been better, instead of just going, hey, you know, jump in the deep end and swim, to say, hey, we're going to fit you in certain places, and we're going to keep the continuity of that back end. But John Elway made a decision. I totally respect it. I totally understand it. It was one of those things, coupled with the lack of offense, that really hurt them. And, you know, and that's just kind of the way it goes. So that's two of the top five. We'll get into the rest of that top five in a little bit. But, you know, how well do you know your teammates? How well do you know this Broncos roster? The answer to that might surprise you next in Morning Brew.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your Morning Brew.
Things are gonna get weird.
You're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and coolers. Stat.
You know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino.
Damn, Jimmy.
This is some serious gourmet.
Let's get it on.
Swinging a fly ball to center. Marte is there. Starling Marte will squeeze it. Praise the Jolly Roger, a mile high. The Pirates have won back-to-back games. Take the series over the Rockies.
Big surprise there. There's the Pirates radio right there. They raised the Jolly Roger right there in the Mile High Stadium, which makes you want to vomit. But that's a tough series loss. You're at home. You've got the Pirates coming in. I understand they were hot at one point earlier in the month, or they had won 11 straight games, I guess, through July and the beginning of August. But really tough loss. Now three series in a row that they have lost. They lost to the St. Louis Cardinals, the Milwaukee Brewers, and now the Pittsburgh Pirates. And we've got four coming in starting today with the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Well, again, because it's at home, Mark, they've played well at home. They've gotten back on their feet at home. But this is why I said those three walk-off losses in 5 days were such a punch to the gut, because now you don't have a lot of margin for error. The Dodgers come in, as you outlined, for four games. Dodgers, all they have to do is split, and they feel comfortable. If you're the Rockies, you have to think in terms of winning three out of four to pick up ground, make a statement that you're not going away. And frankly, the pitching matchups aren't bad. You got Anderson versus Stripling, Gray versus Maeda, Freeland versus Buehler, and Bettis versus Hill. I mean, again, those typically, I would say, favor them in probably at least three of those matchups. I guess you could say Anderson Stripling might be a push, but I'd take Gray over Maeda right now and Freeland over Buehler. I mean, this is a
right.
You got to be thinking, Mark, in terms of three out of four, or you start running out of time. And remember, on the back end of this, they go to Houston for two and Atlanta for four.
Yeah, that's six tough road games right there, because Atlanta's playing well. Houston, obviously, with their pitching, they're ridiculous good. So,
and you land up with Verlander and Cole in Houston. So, oof.
Yeah,
you got to win three or four this week.
Yeah, that's not a great one. Next in the Morning Brew.
Kamara checks in. He's the tailback in the eye. Just one receiver split to this side, and that is going to be Coleman. Here's Kamara. Slips a tackle. 10, 5, touchdown. Is he special or what? A 20-yard touchdown run.
Well, he is special because he came out and said basically they'd beat the back out of the Philadelphia Eagles if they got a chance to play them in the NFC Championship. Well, guess what, Alvin? You didn't get a chance to play them because you didn't handle business in Minnesota the week before. Yeah, I always hate it, Troy. I don't know about you, but I hate it when a player said, "Oh, we would have done this. We would have." Dude, you got to do it. Nobody wants to hear about what you would have done had you won the game that you needed to win to get to the next game to play. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Shut up.
Yeah, here's the deal. You lost, and it was paging Dr. Heimlich. You choked it out.
I mean,
there's no way. You just gave up one of the greatest miracle plays in the history of the NFL. You didn't deserve to be there. All you had to do was play a coverage that allowed you to keep the ball in front of you, and you're going to win the game.
Make a tackle,
inbounds,
the game is over.
So, Kamara, he's an excellent player, and with Ingram out to start the season, Kamara could be a first-team All-Pro this year based on his production as a rookie. But I'm with you, Mark. You know, the idea that somehow they would have done well in the NFC, mm-hmm. stop. Then get there. You don't
right.
like it? Get there. Play better.
Yeah, and I think they're an exceptionally talented team. One of the things that, for me, just keep your mouth shut and go about your business and go prove it on the football field. That's what you need to do. Next in the Morning Brew.
What's up, guys? Chase Daniel here. Don't know if you can recognize me, but I'm going undercover today at Bears camp. I'm going to try to get some guys' autographs. Come follow me along. It's going to be pretty funny.
Chase Daniels dresses up, goes undercover, actually gets Mitchell Trubisky to sign an autograph for him.
It was so funny. That was a really well done piece. And what I appreciated is Chase went in there. He had a bucket cap on, and he had his beard, but he had a number 10 jersey on for Trubisky. But he got all these little kids around him, and he was given nicknames and yelling to bring players over. And only a couple of players recognized him. Mitchell, at the very end, was like, "Wait, oh." And then he was like, "Oh my God, I just saw," and he signed his jersey.
Right.
He signed his jersey that Daniel was wearing, not recognizing it is his backup.
Yeah.
Like, how much time do you guys spend together? You'd think he'd, like, hear his voice and be like, "Wait." And, again, it was funny. It was really well done. I give Chase Daniel all the credit. Talk about a guy that's lived a life.
Right.
Once he played, like, three snaps in his career and made, like, $30 million.
He's throwing one TD, one interception. You know, it's funny. I was at the Super Bowl a couple years ago, and I was with my daughter, and we were at the ESPN compound. We had just walked up, and there was this whole kind of line hanging out over a railing. You know, they had put these temporary railings up to keep people away from the sets. And we were going to go in there, and then I just stood there out the railing with a throng of other people that were getting autographs, and Adam Schefter was going down the line signing things. So we just stood there in line and stuck our stuff out. And Adam, just not even looking, grabs my thing, signs it, grabs my daughter's thing, signs it, and I said, Adam. And he looked at me and goes, oh my God, right? Like I'm an idiot. But that's pretty funny. I think they did a great thing there. That's fun to watch, like you said, Chase Daniels kind of get dressed up and, go undercover to get his teammates' autographs. Next in the Morning Brew.
Brady takes the snap, back on us, fires up, catch made by White, prints to the inside, dives across the goal line. Touchdown, Patriots!
There's one.
Thursday night football, and obviously Patriots highlight, because why wouldn't you put a Patriots highlight out there? Thursday night football kicks off tonight as 12 preseason games are going to be played tonight. Troy, you excited about the start of the NFL preseason, the official start? I mean, I know it started with the Hall of Fame game, but kind of the official start of the NFL preseason tonight.
Yeah, it feels like time. You know, being at Bronco camp, we're here at day 11 out here at UC Health Center, and it feels like time to see a game. And you do get kind of false expectations that it's going to be something, and you realize the starters are out in a blink. But it's good to have football back. There's optimism around this Bronco team, which makes it even a little more exciting. But, yeah, this feels like it started. I mean, the Hall of Fame game happened so quickly, most people don't even realize it's on. Like, I mean, it's early in August.
Right.
You just kind of miss it. This is, in a sense, the official start of preseason. I'm anxious to see Andrew Luck. I know that. Where does he, you know, some of these guys that are coming, J.J. Watt, Andrew Luck, even if they don't play tonight, if they play the next game, there's a couple of huge key players, especially in the AFC coming back, that could impact the race, the playoff chase, and that would start with me. I don't know that, I'm not saying Luck they're going to get in the playoffs, but he's going to help them win more games, and what does J.J. Watt look like this season?
Right, then there's always a few guys that are rookies that you're really excited to see exactly how they play, the way they look. You know, guys that you have great expectations for. You mentioned Andrew Luck. I want to see Quentin Nelson. I want to see the guard for Indianapolis who just dominated college football. And by all accounts, and I've seen some film of him and some one-on-one stuff of him in Indianapolis Colts training camp, they're like, he's a dominant player in training camp as well. So it'll be fun to see that guy. It's always fun to see some of these, guys that were third or fourth or fifth rounders come in and play and perform, like Alvin Kamara, who we talked about earlier, talking about the Philadelphia Eagles and how they'd beat the Eagles. It'll be interesting to see who that next group of running backs is, or who that next group is that comes in here and plays exceptionally well. You know, the Hunts, like in Kansas City, who was a third rounder from Toledo, or Alvin Kamara. Who's going to be that guy that really shines throughout the preseason that everybody starts to get a buzz about?
Needs to be Royce Freeman if you're a Bronco fan.
Right.
He was drafted almost the same position as the Chiefs flip back that won the NFL rushing title last
right.
year. So if you want
to... Yeah, you're obligated to say from Toledo, by the way.
From Toledo.
Yeah, Kareem Hunt from Toledo.
But if you're a Bronco fan and you look for ways this team will rebound, it starts with Royce Freeman playing like that. And that is a storyline I'm watching, because I just feel like Devontae Booker's hold on the starting running back job is tenuous.
Yeah, I think it's tenuous at best. You know, we talked about five Broncos that need to improve for the Broncos to have the kind of season we all hope they have. What about another number five? Should we be focusing on this number five? That and more next. Hey, welcome back. Schlerthen Evans live from UC Health Training Facility, the Broncos training camp. The Broncos are going to kick off practice here at about 9:30. Last practice open to the public before they shutter on down for the preseason game number one versus the Minnesota Vikings. That's exactly what's going to go down. So Troy and I are here. We're walking you right up to practice about 9:30. Cecil Lammy and Mike Pritchard will take you through the practice. So Jets have announced here recently through an article that's on Pro Football Talk that they're open to trading Teddy Bridgewater. And you look at our quarterback situation as it's currently constructed, I think that there's a couple of issues here. One, Teddy Bridgewater hasn't played a game. Last year, I think he took 9 snaps. The year before, he's out completely with that knee. And, you know, the people that I have talked to that know were like, Teddy Bridgewater almost lost his leg. Like, he twisted his knee, dislocated his knee in practice, and, I mean...
He was bleeding out. Like,
yeah.
It was like I hate to say it, it was like a war injury, way he was bleeding out. I mean, if you read that, it's frightening what he went through with that.
Right, and had it not been for their medical staff and the doctors, at practice and stuff, they were like, he potentially could have lost his leg. And so we saw him at the Super Bowl. We talked to him at the Super Bowl. He started, he's starting to feel better, but it's been a 2-year process. He says that during training camp, he's felt a lot better. I don't know what the trade value is there, Troy, but I do know this. Watching the Broncos camp and watching the production fall from the ones down to the next group in Paxton Lynch, it's significant. And I think the Broncos need to address their backup quarterback position. How do you feel about Teddy Bridgewater? And is this a legitimate, would that be a legitimate move in your mind if the Broncos were to make a trade for Teddy Bridgewater?
Well, it's something they need to consider, and they need to obviously keep a close eye on how Paxton Lynch performs on Saturday in the preseason opener. At some point, you have to ask yourself, is it going to get better? You can't keep hoping. We talk about this. Hope is not a strategy. And if you just look at it and go, okay, it's not going to happen. And we don't want the entire offseason, Mark, compromised if Case Keenum was to twist his ankle or hit his thumb on a helmet and not be able to trust Paxton Lynch to win games. And it came up, honestly, Mark, in the barbecue press conference before training camp. John Elway's basically saying he wasn't so concerned about the backup quarterback battle, but who could come in and hold it down? Who could win games? And Paxton has not shown that. So if he doesn't, you have to keep an eye on Bridgewater. But the problem with Bridgewater is you're going to have to wait probably to the end of camp, because they're going to wait for somebody to go, a quarterback to get hurt and someone to overpay for Bridgewater.
I think the other thing about Bridgewater is if you're in that market. Now, I think Bridgewater wants an opportunity to start, obviously. I don't know that he's going to get that opportunity for anybody this year. But if you're in the market for Teddy Bridgewater, you've got to see him play in a preseason game, right? You've got to see him get significant snaps. I mean, remember, he came in last year. He got one snap, and I'll never forget, this was cool for me. Case Keenum was like his biggest cheerleader. And he goes in, the very first pass he throws gets intercepted. I don't know if you saw the game or remember the game, but
yes.
But Case Keenum was like this guy's cheerleader. So he ended up playing 9 plays last season. First 9 plays he's played, since he tore that knee up. In the 2015 season, because he missed all 2016.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's been a long haul for Teddy Bridgewater to get back. I like Teddy Bridgewater. He's never had the elite arm talent that you'd like, but he did have accuracy. He did have anticipation and all those things. But if you're in the market for a Teddy Bridgewater, you gotta see him play. You gotta see him play in games. And, from a medical report standpoint, you just can't go, oh, yeah, we trust that he's going to be fine. I mean, you've got to scrutinize it, right? You've got to dig deep on this guy.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Last thing you want to do is move on from Lynch and bring in a guy who can't play because he's hurt.
Right.
Again, in theory, Bridgewater makes a lot of sense. He's won in the league. He doesn't turn the ball over. He is in every essence a game manager, which is what you want out of a backup quarterback. So keep an eye on that. Another name to file away is Mike Glennon. What happens with him and his situation in Arizona if they determine that Bradford's going to be healthy? Do they move on from him? And, again, if the Broncos just say after this week, we don't want to wait till the end of camp to figure this out, then there's the Matt Moore type, the T.J. Yates type, mm-hmm. which would be, keep an eye on that, because it's a big week for Paxton. He has got to show progress that he's moving toward a finish line, because he has not been consistent in camp so far.
No, he hasn't been consistent. I think one of the things that really, I mean, if you just read the tea leaves, and we all are in this business, and the Broncos do a good job. They keep their business under wraps for the most part, right? They hold their cards close to the vest, and they should. They shouldn't let the public know exactly, or us know exactly, what's going on behind closed doors, because it rattles players, and also if everybody and their brother's uncle knows you're shopping, then guess what? The price goes up, right? It's scarcity of goods. So they should keep that pretty close to the vest. But Chris Harris Jr. said something the other day that resonated, I think, with us as just kind of broadcasters, when he said, man, there's a huge difference. That's a, just this, and I'm paraphrasing, gaping chasm between what the ones are doing. And then he said this. He said, and again, paraphrasing, so I'm not going to get it exactly right, but he said, huge difference between the ones, like it's a completely different offense between the ones and twos. And that to me is one of those situations that, you know, makes me raise my eyebrows, because one of the things you don't want is you don't want to have to say, hey, this is what we've decided we are. This is what we're going to be. And if our starting quarterback goes down for any significant time, we have to change into this. Because now you're asking 10 other guys to adjust their games. Like, we're going to practice this consistently for the, you know, all 3 weeks of training camp and roll into the first game of the season. And then our guy gets hurt and go, okay, guys, on, you know, on Wednesday of week three, we're changing our offense because the guy that backs up our starting quarterback can't operate in the offense that we've been running for, you know, the last month and a half. Like, that's not ideal. It's not even close to ideal. And I think that's one of the things you have to be concerned about. And one of the reasons, if you're reading those tea leaves, like I talked about, you know, you've got to be looking at who a backup is. They can come in here, can assimilate the offense, can understand what we're trying to do, and can go out and execute it, at least execute to the point where you're not turning the ball over and you can, you know, you can keep the ship, so to speak, from listing until your starting quarterback gets back.
Well, the quote exactly, because it was that he said a couple things that day. One, that he thought the offense could score 36 points a game. I tried to help him there and say, hey, pump the brakes a little bit. If they score 30 a game, it would be tops in the NFL from a year ago. But 23, 22, that might be realistic. He said, Chris Harris, in his presser a couple days ago, I feel like Case and the receivers are clicking right now. I expect him to put up points. And he said, it's like they're at level 10, and when the backups come in, it's a, like a way level lower.
Right.
I mean, it was an indictment of the second string. Because you have seen that. Ones versus ones in this camp, very competitive. We haven't seen that since Manning retired.
Right.
And when the twos come in, it's a little clunky. It looks a little clunky, I'm just saying. I'm not saying that that's everything, but... As you know, Mark, you've been in camp. It generally doesn't just fix itself in games. I mean, these practices do matter. And so the idea that if the backups have to play, or the one specifically, a quarterback, could undermine your season, that's an unnerving thought. That's why they have to keep an open mind about the backup situation. Because the thing is, you could bring in a backup and keep Paxton, trade something else, conditional pick, make him your third stringer, and then you likely lose Chad Kelly, because I don't think he would get through to a practice squad. Maybe he does. Or you move on from Paxton completely and bring in the new guy as your backup and keep Chad Kelly as third string.
Yeah, there's so many decisions that are going to have to be made, and I think sooner the better on the backup quarterback situation, because I think it's important, man. I just think, you know, one, you said you were going to have an open competition. There hasn't been an open competition. And, you know, watching Paxton Lynch, and you said it looks clunky, that second team looked clunky. I referred to it, looked like they've been playing in sand. You know, they're just a little bit slow on everything, and it hasn't really improved, and that's got to be cause for concern if you're the Denver Broncos. Well, you talked about Paxton and this being a big game. I'm going to tell you how big a game this is for Paxton when I clear the air next.